what I believe that we need to be doing is we as leaders need to remove the obstacles from you achieving what you need to achieve in your job. That's what I do. The position gives me the power to remove the obstacle. I think it's important to understand that sometimes those obstacles are giving the person the permission to try what they want to try. Sometimes the obstacle I remove is your own personal obstacle you've put up in front of your own job. So it's not just a bureaucratic obstacle. It's not a budget. It's not clearing the way with the supply chain team. Certainly that's a huge piece of it. But sometimes it's just listening to this person, and the obstacle is they don't have the confidence, and I am going to allow them to go out and find the confidence and find their voice. So we have to look at this word obstacle much more abstract and much less tactile.
Welcome to Manager to Manager, a podcast about the experiences of people leaders and how we can enable them to lead engaged, healthy, and high-performing teams. I'm Kamaria Scott, your host, and I'm thrilled to have you join us as we learn, lead, and succeed together.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Manager to Manager. So if you listened to my episode with Jen Rohn, you might have heard her talk about her team and how she supports them in her development. And what you didn't hear in that conversation is that she actually allows all of her direct reports access to a coach that helps them in their own development. So today I'm super excited because you get to meet that coach who actually helps Jen develop her team. And he's going to talk to us today about the experiences he's had as a people leader and give you a couple takeaways about how you might approach it. So Ned, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's really a joy to be here. I'm going to have a good time. That's for sure.
I am so sure. So tell us a little bit about yourself, your history leading people, and what you do now.
Sure. So I started my career actually thinking I wanted to be in law enforcement, which is, as you can understand with that, a very, you know, top-down command control kind of leadership model for obvious reasons. I then went into the military and flew helicopters and became a flight instructor in the Army and had a great run in the military. And then I came out and worked for quite a few different organizations, one of them being a very progressive manufacturing company. I ran their aviation division and then for a variety of reasons decided to get off and into my own. 24 years ago, I started this consulting company. But I was very lucky both in the military as well as in the civilian world of working for some really amazing individuals. So I just morphed and I've looked back on, you know, what it's like to be a leader in the military, because I was one and worked for them, as well as in the civilian world. So that's the short history of it.
I love that. And it's so interesting because my father was in the military. I'm so excited to have this conversation because there is a difference in leading in an environment where it is very top down to maybe leading now where it's more decentralized and cultures are a little bit different. So I'm excited to hear your perceptions on the differences and how leaders really can flex if they have both those skill sets, because we do know that a lot of people leaders do come from a military background into the civilian world. So let's talk about that first. Let's start with military leadership. What did you learn from that experience and how did it affect how you initially started leading teams?
Here's what I will tell you. It's very clear because people wear rank literally on their shoulder. So I see from across the parking lot, if I'm equal, subordinate, or superior to you, whether you work in my area or not, it's very, very simple. There are certain constructs, there are certain traditions, there are certain protocols that we instantly deploy the moment we interact with somebody because of what's on their collar, right? In some ways, that's actually quite helpful because it tells us instantly where we are on this. And what's fascinating about that is what I began to learn is that just because I may have outranked someone or someone outranked me didn't mean that they were instantly in charge. Oftentimes, what we learned was you may outrank them, but put them in charge. It depends what we're trying to get done. So if you go back, if anybody's familiar with situational leadership by Blanchard, it was in practice. It didn't have a name then. We didn't even call it It's just what it was. But I'll never forget, as we graduated with our officers bars and flight school, we had a colonel come in and talk to us who was going to make general. He'd already been selected. He just hadn't been promoted yet. You know how you'll have an experience or somebody will say something and you capture this little golden nugget, right? So this was this golden nugget of, you've got these bars on your shoulder, dots. We were warrant officers at the time, but whatever. He said, you've got this rank. Just understand that there are people that you outrank that know this job better than you do. And he said, if you want your career to flourish, you'll understand what they can do for you and what you can do for them. And I was like, well, wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense to me, right? Until I actually got to my first duty station.
What's interesting about what you've shared so far is that there is a very clear indicator of positional power in the military. And so when you are thinking about leaders and who's in charge, there's not really a question there because you can see it clear as day. And so it might be easy for someone to lead from that space, to lead from the bars on their chest. But I think what I hear you saying is, if you're really good at leadership, even in the military environment, you've learned that you still have to take more of a human approach to knowing who's on your team, knowing what their skill sets are, and thinking of it as mutually beneficial or an opportunity for people to help one another. And I like that you said you might be the most senior person, but you might put somebody else in charge to lead something. So I just want to talk a little bit more about that, about the realization that maybe even if you have bars, it's not always about positional power, or is it?
Well, I mean, it's always present, right? I could be the plant manager or I could be a captain. It doesn't matter. The position is what the position is and whoever holds it. And we cannot ignore that. But what I believe that we need to be doing is, we as leaders need to remove the obstacles from you achieving what you need to achieve in your job. That's what I do. The position gives me the power to remove the obstacle. I think it's important to understand that sometimes those obstacles are giving the person the permission to try what they want to try. Sometimes the obstacle I remove is your own personal obstacle you've put up in front of your own job. So it's not just a bureaucratic obstacle. It's not a budget. It's not clearing the way with the supply chain team. Certainly that's a huge piece of it. But sometimes it's just listening to this person, and the obstacle is they don't have the confidence, and I am going to allow them to go out and find the confidence and find their voice. So we have to look at this word obstacle much more abstract and much less tactile. There's clearly some tactile obstacles for sure. Here's the budget. Boom, done, got it. That's easy. It's these abstract obstacles that we have to be very aware of. And sometimes leaders can get very frustrated because it's like, I give this person permission to go try new stuff every day. They still come ask for permission. Why don't they just go do it? Well, they've got a confidence problem, and maybe you're part of it. Maybe you need to back away from that and understand, what am I doing that you don't feel comfortable just giving this a try?
I like that, the power to remove the obstacle. I'm going to put that on a t-shirt of some sort, because that's really what it is, right? I'm in a space where what I'm doing here is not necessarily giving orders or telling someone what to do, but thinking about, how am I supposed to look at the work that they're supposed to do, and how do I leverage the position that I'm in to actually help them?
Now, let's flip it just a moment if we can, and let's use a term that is, in fact, our mutual friend Jen, her favorite term is platform on fire, right?
Yes.
When the platform's on fire, then the person at the top of the chain is giving the orders and everybody else is listening and they're not questioning. I think you said your dad was in the Navy.
Yes.
When the fire breaks out on ship, we're not having a committee meeting. You know,
yes.
we're not doing an A3 problem solving here. We're spraying water on the fire, and you're going to do that, and you're going to do that, and you're going to do that. And if you go to a fire scene and watch the incident commander, you know, it's, when he tells a fireman to get out, or she tells a fireman to get out of the building, it's get out now. Mm-hmm. There's no discussion around that. So that's a very order giving top down. In my world as a pilot, you know, when I'm pilot in command and I say do this, I don't want to have a conversation around it. It needs to be done. But that's that situational leadership that we have to be able to absorb and transfer from. How is that a little different than in the military?
Yes.
It's more of that in the civilian world.
Yeah, and I love that because what I hear you saying is that when you are in a position of leadership, you have, I'm going to say, command of a team, whether it's civilian, whether it's military, you are in this role where you have to know, when is it not a dialogue? When is it, this is what I need us to do, and it's really not open for discussion and feedback, versus I know that I'm the leader of this team, but I don't need to lead you from positional power because I trust you to do the work and I know that you're going to go through it. And one of the, probably the call, one of the biggest shifts of going from individual contributor to people leader is learning the difference, learning when you are directive and you're simply saying, this is the way forward, versus when it's a conversation, when you sometimes even defer, going back to what you said earlier about, I might have higher bars, but that doesn't mean I need to be in charge and I can put you in charge of it, even if I outrank you. So that understanding of situational leadership to say, this might not be my opportunity to be directive, or something's on fire and it absolutely is.
Yeah, 100%. And I also want to point out that I do believe there's this non-platform on fire place for a very directive leadership style. And that is about setting the culture and the expectations that I have for the team. A dear friend of mine retired as a colonel from the Air Force. He shared with me how he set expectation for his team in the Air Force. And I will tell you, it's probably one of the most brilliant approaches I think I've ever seen. And it's also something that is so poorly done, is setting expectations across the board, that it just makes me want to pull the front of my face off. But I will tell you that this is a place where we're not, it's not another committee meeting. Here's my philosophy on trust.
Okay.
And you know, blah, 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 and whatever it is, right? And we go through it. We go, and that's how we're going to do it here. Here's my philosophy on cleanliness in the workshop, on safety, on quality of our product, whatever those topics are. If you're setting the culture, this is not debatable. Set your culture and own it and tell them why that's important to you. Other things can be debatable. Other things can be committee. I can delegate things to you and let you, but this culture is this place we live in. All of these other things are inside of this. And culture setting and expectation setting is not done very well. And that's the one thing I will tell you I always thought was done better in the military. I've always looked back and gone, you know, I never really wondered how to interact with Major so-and-so, because he made it extremely clear, not just from the military, but his personal approach. I thought that was incredibly important, and I've tried to carry that through with me.
You said that you had someone who did it really well. Can you share what that looked like? I'd love for us to learn as we go. So are there any words of wisdom or just best practices from your friend that you can share with us?
Yeah. So I always work for people that did a really good job of setting expectations. But I will tell you, my buddy Tom Doral, who's retired now, just absolutely knocked it out of the park. He shared with me this memo he sent to his team. And he breaks everything down about from communication, trust, accountability. And you know, it was almost philosophical, and yet it wasn't so philosophical. You couldn't take that and apply it. So one of the things, as I think about it, that he had in his letter, you know, I think something along accountability, he said, little transgressions turn into big ones. Don't allow the little ones to get to the big ones, right? He talked about people's personal lives. If you get in trouble, I want to be the first to know. I need to be the first to know. I don't want to be the last to know. And it was just like, I know who this guy is. And I know exactly what he expects out of me. Absolutely brilliant. And I don't know. It's not that hard. And yet everybody is so hard.
You know what? You're so right. And sometimes I get excited in conversations when I hear things that I love because it really resonates. You probably worked a while in helping people grow. And I worked in L&D a long time. And so when I think about how we develop people leaders and maybe the expectation around really clearly saying that as the leader of the group, because there are certain responsibilities that come with being the official leader, which is, again, why I love this conversation. I talk a lot to managers. I'm not always talking to somebody who's way up in the organization. I'm talking about people who have a designated responsibility to somebody else. And in that responsibility is to be clear about expectations and be clear about what they can expect from you. And lack of clarity is where a lot of teams go wrong. I don't know that we always say to new leaders or even current leaders, it is inherent in the role that you set expectations and that you live by them and hold them. And you are that culture. And so even with my own teams, one of the things that I realized along the way is whether I do it explicitly or whether I do it implicitly, I am the culture set setter. Mm-hmm. So if they see me laugh, they know it's okay to laugh. Mm-hmm. If they see me being honest and receiving feedback from them that might be difficult, they know that this is a team where we share messages, even me, to help people get better and grow. And so taking that time from just a leadership perspective, somebody who leads a team, to say, not only am I going to sit and be clear with myself about what is the culture I want for this team, what are the expectations that I have for this team, but then I'm also going to be really clear about communicating that so that everybody knows what the standard is and we don't have confusion. And I think it's Brené Brown who said, clear is kind. You start off on a good foot and you get to results when everybody knows what's expected.
100%. And I will tell you, one of the things that I think that leaders need to do better, and I actually saw this in the military, and that is the art, the skill, the gift, whatever you want to call it, of, and one begets the other, vulnerability, and those either lead into or come from, it can go either way, storytelling. I cannot begin to tell you how important storytelling is in setting the culture with your team. When I had my aviation business, one of the mechanics of it, you know, every group has the spokesperson, official or
yes.
Well, let Brad, and it was Brad in this group, and Brad and I are still friends to this day. Brad came to me, he goes, hey, the guys want me to tell you, you're really being a jerk when you come out on the shop floor. I go, okay, about what? And he said, well, you know, you're always on them about safety and you're really being a jerk about it. So I'll never forget, I talked to my dad, God rest his soul. I said, you know, I had this feedback from one of my guys today, Dad, and I'm not real sure what to make of it. And Dad was a guy that could say a book in four words. And he said, oh, well, you haven't made it clear to them why it's important to you. That was it. That was all I got from Dad, right? That was it.
Yeah.
So I went and I sat down with him and I told him some stories. And I said, and I got vulnerable with him. So the story brought the vulnerability. In this case, sometimes the vulnerability will bring the story. I told him, I said, look, I have no interest in making any more notifications that someone is hurt or killed. I've done that.
Yes.
And so I told them these stories. And it was interesting because they now understood the importance and the reason behind why I was driving things. Now, you know, maybe I could have driven it a little more professionally, and I certainly changed it that way. And I got a little more tactical about it. And there was some interactive communicative pieces I had to improve on. But once we had that understanding, then everything began to shift.
Yes.
Immediately. And it was interesting because all of a sudden they'd be in my office with a personal problem. Not that I really wanted that, but it's important in order to be that referral to EAP or to whatever, right? To go to HR and say, I've got an employee with a problem and I don't know what to do about it. You know, I mean, it's not even in work. It's just this thing. And which we all get. And I tell new leaders, I go, if it hasn't happened to you yet, put on your seatbelt because it's going to happen.
It absolutely is. There's two things that I hear from that stand out to me. One of them is from your dad's wisdom. It still brings me back to, even if you have positional power, you can't lead from there. You still have to bring that vulnerability in. You still have to explain why. You still have to appear and be human to people when you are leading them, so that they'll be open to have those conversations with you and they'll be open to share. And then I think the other part of it is the stories help them to understand the why, so that they can arrive at the same conclusion that you do.
Absolutely.
And that's a huge, that's the influence of being a people leader is really helping them say, what would Ned do? And why would Ned do it? I agree with what Ned said. I'm going to do it too, right? And so it's not overly instructive or directive, but it is bringing them and influencing them the way that you want to go. And then the second thing that you said that I really loved was going back to the, I am in a position now to remove obstacles. And so when I am vulnerable and I let them see that and then they become vulnerable to me, it still better positions me to remove the obstacles for what's happening for them. And so I, as I reflect on what you're saying, it still brings me back to how important it is to know and be aware that you have positional power, but then also know how to use it appropriately to help your teams.
Yeah, I worked for a very short time on a project, and it was a general, and he had a process called low man first. It's politically correct in the civilian world, but we happen to all be men, and we all had rank, so it
we'll adapt.
But we would be struggling with a project or a problem, and if it didn't require situational leadership, if it didn't require him saying, we're doing it this way, he would throw it on the table, and then he went, low man first, Sergeant Major, what do you think? And so the Sergeant Major would say what he thought, and then I was a warrant officer, I was next to Mr. Parks, and then we had a captain and a major on the team. And I asked him when I rolled off that project, I said, I don't know that I ever heard any of your ideas when you would do that. And now you have to understand, this guy had a sense of humor that was as big as a dump truck and a personality was big as the outdoors. He said, I didn't want you to know how dumb my ideas were. Which at first I took as just a throwaway funny line, but he actually meant it. He was dead serious. He said, understand something. I can take my shirt off. You will not forget that I got 2 stars. If my idea comes out first, that Sergeant Major is not going to disagree with it very much at all. And neither are you, the captain or the major. And boy, that was like, oh my gosh, you got to be kidding me.
Yes.
Now, somebody that understood positional power.
We use situational awareness and a Blanchard way of talking about it. But the understanding of the situation of your positional power is so important. Because I remember being on a phone call with one of my directs, and culturally, we are different, where I might present in a very direct, forward way, right? They do not. And I had to remember that whatever I say, they're not going to disagree with me. And I have to be deliberate about saying, please disagree with me. Please poke holes. Please, you know, again, on one of my teams, we have a saying, it's a kid called the baby ugly. And I deliberately use that term because I want them to know, you can say, Camaria, that what you just said is a hot mess. Don't do that. Please don't, right? And I think about even the conversations that we have about being inclusive. The deliberateness of saying, hey, I'm going to start with maybe the voice that I wouldn't necessarily hear because in this environment, probably the low man on the total pole doesn't always get asked first. Right. The deliberateness in including voices that you wouldn't ordinarily hear and not leading with your own is still, for me, again, it's situational awareness of being clear about what situation other people are in relation to you. The more senior you are, the less people are going to disagree with you, the less they're going to challenge you. And if you're not deliberate in welcoming it in, you're just going to get basically echoes of what you said. And that can be dangerous in both military and civilian environments.
Well, it sure can. Absolutely. It sure can. And I also think it's important that we set the expectation of when I'm the leader of how are you to, A, disagree with me? What are my expectations for how I want you to go about that? And also when you're angry with me, because I don't care what your rank is. You're going to make somebody angry at some point, right? That's
right.
The nature of people being in the same room. And we should have that, the ability for that conversation to take place. And however you design it, just live with it. I don't care. You know, people say, well, how do I design that? I go, well, I can tell you a story. I can give you some examples, but at the end of the day, you got to figure out how you want to do it, right? But then you have to live with it. So if that direct report comes in and says, man, I was really angry with what you said at the meeting this morning, you got to sit down, shut up and listen, because that's what you said you were going to do.
Yeah.
Right. And that's there's a vulnerability to that. I keep coming back to this great gift of vulnerability that you have to share it. And a lot of people say, you know, well, if you share that as a leader, you know, people will think you're weak. Nonsense. I think they think you're stronger and way more relatable and way more approachable. Because they go, oh, wow, you know, that would upset me too. And the boss showed that.
Yeah.
So I just think that's really important, that whether I'm wearing a military uniform or the uniform of my company, there's a couple of things that never change. Honor, trust, vulnerability, the development of you as a person. None of that changes. So many people think, oh, it's all completely different. It's actually not.
It's not.
It really isn't. I mean, I had career conversations with my superiors when I was in the military. I had them when I was in the civilian world. I don't know why that is. Why do you think that's different, right? It's not. And I don't think it should be different. And I think that there are things that are very much the same.
So I love that you said that there's similarities and there's differences to how you lead, whether or not you're in a military uniform or you're in a civilian uniform. And so thinking about that transition from like one uniform to another, if I am hiring someone sort of fresh out of the military and I'm wanting to bring them into a civilian environment, what are some of the things I should be looking for that tell me they're going to make that transition, or I'm going to see those transferable skills come from one environment to another?
So there's a lot of language that I think the hiring company needs to learn so they can understand a little better what they're hearing from the person they're trying to hire. So, you know, budgets can be very different in the military, but there's still a budget and still has to be managed and it's still a number. And so that is 100% transferable. But you might go, well, you didn't manage a budget of $4 million. I might have managed a budget of resources worth $187 million. So there's a ton of transferables there. And I think that companies that want to hire folks in the military need to educate themselves. That'd be the one thing. On the more person-to-person level, though, I will tell you this. We take a 19-year-old and we give them an unbelievably beautiful amount of training in the military. And then we put them in charge of a $27 million tank and they go. Or they're on a team and they're the loadmaster of the C-17 and they're in charge of getting everything latched down, properly placed. Massive responsibility, just incredible responsibility. And then they kick up to a corporal and they kick up to a sergeant and then they come out somewhere along the line. And so they've had all this responsibility. And then we come in and they say, now, if you're going to buy a 47-cent, I have to get it approved first. And it is a massive amount of disrespect to what that person is coming from. And if you don't think there isn't a clashing there and a resentment, it's just astounding. So I tell customers all the time and clients, if you're going to hire out of the military, understand and educate yourself what you're getting. Because I don't think they really, what skill sets these people have. And many of them coming out of the military don't know how to translate the message. So it's a two-way street. But I put the onus on the company to learn it.
Yeah.
They need to learn it for their own career. But you need to learn how that's transferable back to you building a widget or whatever it is, or taking care of patients or whatever it is your particular organization does. And that's something I preach all the time is education is what they bring you.
Well, it's so interesting, too, because if we continued along our theme of positional power, the organization is in a position to bring people in and to create the culture and to know and understand the culture that people have come from to help them adapt to coming into their environment. And so at no point in time, I think, does anybody get free of the responsibility of the position that they're in. And so what I hear you almost saying is that the same thing that you would want for them if they were working for you and they were inviting people into their own teams about expectations and about, you know, giving people latitude to make decisions. These are the same things that people who are transferring over to become leaders in organizations are asking based upon their own experience. And so that modeling all the way up from the organizational experience to the one-to-one experience still has to be there. It still has to be this acknowledgement and care to say, there's someone on the receiving end of what I'm doing. Let me be really informed and impactful and intentional about what they're getting from me and the experience that I'm creating.
100%. Yeah. And let's be clear, just because somebody wore a military uniform does not instantly make them a good leader. I mean, there's failures no matter what uniform you're wearing. And there's people really good at being in positions and people really bad at it. And so, you know, it's not the magical poofy dust that we throw in people when they wear a military uniform. Oh, you're going to be perfect in one workplace. Well, you know, you may not be. So I don't want people to get the wrong impression here, but I do think it's important to understand that the default position is it's different here than in the military. Well, it's different everywhere from everywhere else. That's number one. And number two, it's not just this complete order giving environment in the military. There's very much give and take. There's very much dialogue. There's very much what's the best way to go about this. I try to introduce after action reports, after projects to companies, and I say, this is what we did in the military. When I tell them how it works, they run for the hills. They go, are you out of your mind? I led this project, and I'm going to let that hourly midnight operator tell me what went wrong. Huh? Yeah, you are. It's exactly it. You did that in the military? Yeah, we did. That's how the next mission goes better. Yeah, it's exactly what we did. You know, check your ego at the door, check your rank at the door, and let's come in and have a conversation. And they're like, that's not what we see on the movies. I go, well, you know.
That's not what we see. I love that. I love that. If someone is leading and they're really trying to get better at understanding and being impactful about the intent and impact that they have on their team members. And again, I know you do a lot of coaching for Jen's team and other clients. What would be your suggestion of how they really get awareness to how they're leading, what kind of leader they are? Are they effective? Is what they're doing creating the environment that they're really trying to have with their teams? How do you help people in that way?
I think that it's a multitude of different ways that they need to tap in. I don't think there's one. When I hear this, I know it's good. When I hear that, I know it's bad. I wish it was that easy, but it's not.
Yes.
So one of the things that I think is important is when we do scheduled one-on-ones, don't get me started. I could do a whole show on how important those are, but the end question of that should be from the leader to the subordinate, what could I be doing better? And I tell everybody, when you ask that question, they go, is anybody going to answer it? I go, the first six times, no. When they know and they trust you and you're willing to be vulnerable and listen, then they'll start answering it. And the only way they're going to do that is by you continuing to ask, and then one of them will be brave and pierce through and you'll have a productive conversation. They'll go tell everybody else, right? So that's a way. It is not the only way.
Yes.
There's tons of instruments. There's 360s. There's all this skip reporting and skip interviewing, all this other kind of stuff, right? And again, all of it has its place.
Yes.
So what I honestly believe, though, is none of it should be done solely in place of a one-to-one conversation with another team.
I love that you said that, because one of the things I implemented with my own teams was like we had quarterly conversations where we do a look back, look forward, develop. And so they're very one-directional when you are the leader and you're like, okay, let's talk about your last quarter. Let's talk about what you want to do going forward. Let's talk about maybe your development areas. And one of the things that I implemented was that in every quarterly conversation, I would invite them to give me feedback. So instead of it just being a one-way, my look back, look forward, develop, I would also collect that from them about my performance. Because I came away from it with understanding is that, you know, even with situational leadership, it's so subjective to what that person needs. And so we assume that we're doing it the right way, but it may not be the right way for the person that we're leading. And inviting that conversation allows us to make sure that we're matching what that person needs from us. And to your point, it also is that vulnerability to be like, she's human. She'll hear my feedback. She'll talk to me about it. She'll flex herself to it. And that, I think, just makes any team much, much, much stronger. So I love that you said that.
And I think it's important to in whatever assessment you may use, I'm a big proponent of using good ones, not bad ones, but there's several that I really like. And what I'd say is that should be a growth opportunity and a learning opportunity about yourself. Be willing to look yourself in the mirror, right? And ask yourself, what can I do better? We can go to any bookstore or library and ask for the leadership section, and it takes up 40% of the building because there's no shortage of people that have an opinion about it. And for the most part, it's really some valuable stuff. I don't really think there's a whole lot that's bad necessarily. But the one thing that's kind of a theme that I see is I'll grab the book and it'll go, you know, here's how to be a good leader. And they'll have Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, Abraham Lincoln,
Magic Johnson,
Colin Powell, and Vince Lombardi on there. And they'll, you should be like them. And I go, all right, I don't look like any of them. I didn't have their background. I don't have their intellect. I don't have any of that thing, right? So it's like, okay, well, that's cute. Okay, Vince did this and Martin Luther King did that and so-and-so did that. Okay, whatever, right?
Yes.
And that's all valuable information. Don't get me wrong. But what I much would rather do is say, what do those highly disparate people have in common? And I have a personal belief on this, that a couple of things that they have in common is I don't think any of them took themselves too seriously, number one. I think that they continually looked in the mirror every day and said, what's my legacy for today? Am I proud of it? And if I'm not, what am I going to do about it? Do I have something to fix? Did I blow up at a team member that I have to go back and apologize for that or whatever that looks like? What could I do better tomorrow? So there's some base questions. I also think, and I found this to be true with people I've worked for, they're unapologetically honest about what they're good at.
Yes.
What they're not good at. And I don't mean in a boastful way on what they're good at. They just know, I'm really good at this, and I'm going to do a lot of it, and I'm not good at that, and I'm either going to do one of two things. I'm going to get good at it because I have to, or I don't have to, so I'm going to get it off my desk. I'm going to delegate it. I'm going to hire it up. I'm going to do something. And they're pretty unapologetically honest about that as well. And so to me, I don't care if you're wearing the uniform or not, or whatever your uniform looks like, right?
It doesn't sure.
be the uniform of the law department or the uniform of the Navy. Doesn't matter to me. If you're a good leader, you're looking in the mirror first and you're understanding. And some of that is with an assessment, whether it be a print, which I use, a disc, whatever. It's like, yep, that's me. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's me. It's not the me that I would like to be there every day. And that's the me that I'd like more of, right?
Yes.
And they're just really honest with themselves about it. And when they do that, I always say there's no holding them back.
I love that. That is probably the best ending point we can have, because encouraging people to look in the mirror and be very deliberate, no matter what position you are in, no matter what uniform you're wearing, to be deliberate and look in the mirror about who you want to be as a leader and how you want to show up, and that will never steer you wrong. So this has been an amazing conversation. I want to thank you so much for everything that you have shared, especially I don't often get to talk positional power with people. So this has been just fun for me, more fun than I can tell you.
Oh, good.
And just so insightful. So thank you for bringing your experience and your expertise to me and the listeners. If somebody wanted to reach out to you, is LinkedIn the best way to do that?
Probably, yeah. It's Ned Parks, Akron, Ohio. I'm probably the easiest guy on the internet to find. So by all means, LinkedIn would be the quickest and easiest. Go ahead and reach out. Say, I heard you on the podcast and could we connect? And I'm always willing to do that.
I love that. So listen, if you're listening and you want to reach out to Ned, please do so. Also, again, I think this is an amazing conversation. I encourage you to like it, share it in your network, and really just use it as a conversation starter with another people leader in your network to start talking about the impact and the intent and how you are using your positional power to help your teams grow and removing obstacles for them. So on behalf of Ned and myself, thank you for listening to Manager to Manager, and we'll see you next time.